The Data Engineering Show is brought to you by Firebolt, the cloud data warehouse for low latency analytics. Get $200 credits and start your free trial at firebolt.io.
Hi, and welcome back, everyone, to the Data Engineering Show. It's my total pleasure to have Matt Weingarten on the show today. He's a lead data engineer at Disney Streaming right now, based out of Seattle. Spent quite a bit of time in industry already, was at Facebook before, did his master's at the University of Florida. Really great to have you on the show today, Matt. Do you quickly want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, of course. So yeah, Matt Weingarten here. I've been in the data engineering space for roughly 7 years. I technically started as a software engineer, like probably a lot of people in the data world, and then kind of just learned, you know, the tools of the trade of data engineering from there, because a lot of the things I was working on were data centric. And so I felt that's what best applied to me, and I've stayed there ever since, and I've really enjoyed it. So I think, you know, the data space as a whole, it's really exciting, especially like what's going on in the last few years, you know, seeing how it's evolved from, you know, when I started, which even was a more evolved form from a course a few years before that, when, you know, data engineering kind of really started to take off. So it's a great time to be in this space, and I'm glad to be on this program.
That's definitely super exciting. And I couldn't agree more on your comments on the data space. So what's kind of on your mind these days, right? So kind of, yeah, like what are the big topics basically that you're thinking about at the moment in terms of data?
So to give some more context, you know, I work on a team that's working with Clickstream Analytics within Disney. So on an average day, you know, we're processing around 1 billion records, you know, representing, you know, different user actions within like the, you know, Disney streaming ecosystem. So when, you know, you're logging into an application like Disney Plus or working with any of like the different ESPN applications, you know, we're tracking all of that data. And so it is a true, you know, big data, you know, application that we have in place due with like the scale of what we're handling. So there's various challenges involved with that, although I think we've gotten it into a pretty good form for, at this point. So really kind of like what we're focusing on is, you know, just, you know, business projects, you know, anything that our data can leverage in order to help contribute to business. That's a big aspect of that. But then really kind of like where I pay some attention is just trying to see how we can do various things better. You know, for example, like one I think that everybody's kind of trying to approach right now is data quality. Lots of data, of course, can be a cause of a lot of issues. So we want to be able to see how we can kind of really, you know, look more into what we're actually producing and making sure that what we have in place is like of the highest quality. So that, along with some of the other standard challenges, I feel is like where we spend most of our time these days.
Tell me a bit more about that, right? In terms of kind of data quality, because this is something that comes up very consistently in this show. And there's so many aspects to this, right? Proper testing, having a staging environment, writing like unit tests for data, having data observability tools. What's your take on this space, right? Like, what have you seen really provides a lot of value? Have you seen something that maybe doesn't work so well? Give us your thoughts on data quality.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, but kind of like a lot of the principles that, I like within data quality, I actually got from Facebook, what's now Meta, during the time I was there. So one thing that they did really well, with a lot of the pipelines they had, you know, what you would first do is you would write data to kind of like an intermediate table, and then you would run various, you know, DQ checks on top of that data. Once all those DQ checks passed, data, you know, was pushed to its final location. So essentially, you weren't
like
pushing
a bit like write, audit, publish.
Yeah, you had an intermediate layer to basically be like, all right, are we sure everything's good here? And I think that's a great practice. I wish that would, and I feel like that's becoming more standard, but I wish that was like the standard, because, you know, what I've seen in a lot of places, you know, for the places that even have, you know, data quality checks implemented, but they'll be doing it on top of like the, you know, final layer of the data itself, which is good that you have it at least, but, you know, you want to make sure that you have a single source of truth. And if you're running, you know, those checks on top of that and the data turns out to be wrong, well, now you have to go back and fix that. You know, teams who are running reports off of that data already have to go back and reprocess their things. I like to keep, you know, the final layer as clean as possible, or at least that's my philosophy on it. So, I think that's one good practice that I've seen. And, you know, to go back to some of the other points, yes, you know, of course, having lower environments where you can do testing, building in unit tests, which I think is something we're going to actually start to really try to focus on a little more, at least within my team. I think some of the projects that we've worked on in the last few months have kind of revealed the need to have some more of that in place. So we've realized that we need to have a good practice there because, you know, if we don't have that proper testing in place beforehand, we go and deploy something, we start running, other people point us out to issues, and then we have to start all over again. You know, we have to make the fixes, we have to backfill data, which is an expensive exercise. You know, we want to make sure we're doing things as cleanly as possible. So I think we really want to take some lessons there and make it a stronger practice for us.
Gotcha. In terms of this auditing step, right, of like having an intermediate stage where you put your data before you actually then publish it to your downstream consumers, what are the big things there, right? It's okay, there's some easy stuff you can do, looking at the distribution of certain values, making sure, hey, are all of the timestamps I have in there actually from the last couple of days? Do we have certain correlations, certain distinct counts, all of that stuff? Anything fancier kind of you're doing or kind of you advocate doing when you then look at whether the data you have in that like staging area basically meets your quality bars?
Yeah, so I mean, this is something we have kind of just started approaching. I have a lot of thoughts in this space, but really it's going to be kind of like a continual approach or an incremental approach rather to get to that, you know, just taking it one step at a time. So I think first, of course, is defining, you know, the core checks that you would expect with data. Like, hey, this is a primary key. Are there any duplicates? Like, because if there's duplicates, there's an issue. Like, we know that right away. So having that, you know, checking for nulls where they shouldn't apply, some of those just like, you know, basic checks we should have in place. Then we want to have checks against like our, you know, core metrics, our KPIs, making sure those all look good. And then we kind of want to dive into the area of trend checks. So like, you know, a lot of our data, what we see is a lot of seasonality involved with it, especially because we're working with sports data. We know exactly when, you know, we're going to see spikes in our data. Like, for example, the Super Bowl is this Sunday. It's one of the biggest sporting events in the world. So we know we're going to see a spike this Sunday of traffic compared to other weeks. You know, during the week, things are usually pretty quiet. During the weekend, when a lot of the big sporting events happen, that's when we see those jumps. So we want to make sure we're accounting for that. Like over a month or over a week or whatever time period makes sense, we want to make sure that, hey, we've seen, you know, a drop of like 20% of, you know, logged in sessions. You know, if that might be normal behavior, if we were expecting that, but of course, that can totally reveal something different. So we really want to make sure we have that in place. And then I think another point about data quality that sometimes isn't necessarily discussed enough, but one thing with this is we want to make sure that, you know, our approach to data quality is a conversation between us and our business stakeholders as well. You know, we have an idea of what our data quality check should look like, but our stakeholders might have some other ideas based on what they think is critical. So we should take that into account as well, because it shouldn't just be something that applies to us. It's their data at the end of the day as well. So we want to make sure that we kind of go in both directions in terms of how we're incorporating that.
That makes perfect sense. So one thing kind of coming myself from a software engineering background, right, that I'm seeing is, okay, kind of writing tests, checking for the data integrity, like that makes perfect sense. The next step then is you have something failing, right? Okay, like you have a test in your CI that doesn't succeed as a software engineer, or you have some data quality checks kind of that fail in your before you publish that data. How do you approach debugging that, right? Because like the actual like root cause for why your data isn't in a good shape might be very far kind of upstream in your data pipeline. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've definitely had to do, you know, a fair amount of that. You know, sometimes we have to go all the way up to like the source of our data and then actually check there to see what's going on. You know, it could just be some things like, you know, bad data there or some issue with like timestamps, which can come into play all the time. It seems like it's always timestamps, it feels like, more often than not in some way, shape or form. So we just have to, you know, we definitely make sure we do the proper analysis. And of course, I think part of that is making sure that we're enabled to do that analysis quickly, because sometimes it can become a process to really try to actually, you know, dive down into that data. But we want to make sure that we can speed that up so that it's easier to do that, because yes, there's a lot of comparisons that we need to do when it comes to that. So we want to make sure everybody's enabled to do that properly.
Are there any tools at the moment that you're particularly excited by in this space? So one company we had on the show, for example, in the past was Monte Carlo. We were doing a lot of like kind of data observability and lineage and these types of things. This feels like such a quickly changing space, right? And kind of like there's new tools coming to the market all the time. Anything that maybe you've worked in the past, doesn't have to be at your current employer, that you find really exciting?
Yeah, so I think Monte Carlo is great. You know, I've been really impressed by Bar as a thought leader in the data space, especially. I know that we've also just tried, you know, smaller things like DQ, the library that Amazon, I think, built a long time ago. Great Expectations is one that a lot of teams use as well. So we've looked at a few of those things. I think as we start to turn more towards both having a quality observability, monitoring, you know, all those aspects, you'll need some type of platform for that. So whether it's built in-house or whether it's using one of those tools, I guess that remains to be seen. But yeah, I've been really impressed by some of the developments that have been going on in that area.
So one other thing that also always comes up when we talk to people on the show is cost, right? So data quality, of course, is on everyone's mind. We're serving the business in the end, and to make good business decisions, we need to make sure we look at the right data. The other part is we need to provide that insight in a cost-effective way. What are your thoughts on that, basically?
Well, I think it's kind of funny that you asked that, because that's something I'm very passionate about, actually, is that whole area. And I think a lot of companies have been over the last year or so, if not before then, because, you know, 2023, if you were going to kind of summarize that, you know, there was layoffs that were happening almost everywhere. Even right now, they're still happening in a few places. But, you know, 2023 was really when a lot of that took hold. And we kind of realized that, you know, especially during the beginning of the pandemic, you know, stock market was in a great place. Everybody was hiring like crazy. And now things have to be scaled back a little bit. And one of the things that we can look at first is, you know, data products, because data applications, and this is something, you know, you kind of overlook when you're talking about, you know, costs and, you know, optimization and that whole area, which is kind of referred to as FinOps for those who are familiar with the term. But big data applications are one of the most expensive things usually, because, you know, you're working with big data. You set up big servers, you have a lot of data storage, you know, you need to make sure you're doing that in a cost-effective manner, or, you know, you'll see a very big bill at the end of the month from whatever your cloud provider is. So we've definitely done a lot of work in that space. And I would say we have, and we still have to continue to do so, because it's just something you have to keep working on. You know, you can't just work on this in 1 month and then say you're done. You know, this whole thing is a continuous effort, and we've made a lot of good progress in that space through some various practices, which I'm happy to dive into more. But yeah, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
So let's talk a bit about practices, right? Say I'm a data engineer, my manager's coming to me saying, hey, like we're spending $500K a year on this data pipeline. Like, let's figure out how we can reduce cost here while retaining certain level of data freshness or whatever. Like, what are tools in my toolbox now as a data engineer, and where can I learn more about that?
Yeah, so the way I kind of approach it is there's two different aspects that I think are critical when you're kind of like looking at the how to, you know, fine tune, you know, these data applications. First side is the storage side. So, you know, effective almost always, you know, you have to store data somewhere because it needs to be accessible. So, you know, if you're using, like, for example, some file system like S3, coming from an AWS background, that's the first one that comes to mind. So with that, you know, you can see some really expensive costs in S3 because by default, all files are being stored in like standard storage, which is great because you can retrieve those things really quickly, but it's also the most expensive form of storage. Now, if I'm storing data there from 5 years ago, that I'm only going to refer to like once, maybe every few years for like auditing purposes, then you don't want to keep that in standard storage, and you want to put that in like some like Glacier or something like that, which is much cheaper. And when you start to apply that to, you know, tens, hundreds, you know, of terabytes for your data, that cost can drop really quickly. You know, we saw a lot of improvements just from looking at that. The other side, of course, is compute. Now, compute, there's a lot of progress that's gone on in this space. It just feels like every other week, you know, you're seeing some, you know, you're seeing like Databricks or Snowflake or any of the internal tools within any of the cloud companies. They're bragging about, you know, how they've kind of helped in this aspect, you know, whether it's having serverless technologies or, you know, optimizing compute from some other means. There's been a lot of great development in that space. You know, there's a bunch of different fine points that we've kind of just followed by looking at some of their overall best practices. And we've made a lot of good progress there as well. You know, just making sure we're using only what we need. You know, that's a big one, because sometimes by default, you'll just like clone something and it'll end up being like a 100 node cluster that, you know, you could be doing with 10 nodes. So just that type of, you know, making sure we're doing things correctly, optimized as much as possible. That's really helped us, you know, get to where we want to. Although, like I said earlier, still a lot more to come in that space, but, you know, a lot of progress to this point.
Interesting. How about things like modeling, right? So tools are the one thing, sure, we want to optimize our compute. We want to optimize our storage bill, right? These types of things. But then you also have things like, okay, on the serving side, right? Like, do I denormalize or have like a highly normalized schema to optimize for query performance, which should in the end kind of go into spend? Like, do you feel like also in the community as a whole, people think about these cost aspects enough when they're approaching how to model certain scenarios, for example? Or do you think modeling is actually not that important there?
I feel like that one does get overlooked, but that's certainly, you know, a very relevant point. You know, one thing that I think the primary consideration when it comes to modeling, and sometimes what happens first, is, you know, you try to think about, you know, your consumers, your stakeholders, how you're modeling that data for them. You know, we often see sometimes that, you know, you try to stuff a lot of information into one table or like some super big view, because, you know, that just makes it easier for consumers to query. You know, they're not necessarily going to be as experienced with joining a bunch of tables together, you know, exploding nested elements, all those things. So you try to keep it very simple. But of course, you know, that can have implications for the cost. But that, I feel like that definitely does get overlooked. So I think when designing models, if you want to kind of really do it the effective way, you got to balance, you know, your consumer's needs along with, you know, what you think is the proper architecture. Because of course, yes, you know, you could go for like some super normalized form, which, you know, if you were in a database classes in college, you know, it would mark off all the check boxes, you would get an A+. But that's not always the most, you know, business effective solution. So you kind of have to weigh those considerations and see what makes the most sense for everything.
One thing in these cost debates that then often comes up is, right, this idea of data ROI, because it might be perfectly fine for a certain pipeline to cost a whole lot of money if it's providing that value again with a certain markup, of course, kind of for the organization. Do you have any thoughts on that, right? It's like, because as a data engineering team, you should be able to kind of say, hey, our data pipelines or kind of the dashboards we're providing, the analytics we're providing and so on is contributing at the end of the day to the bottom line of the company. What's your take here?
Yeah, I think we do, I think we do need to get to a better definition on that. And I know that's something we're trying to kind of enable. You know, one thing that I feel like has been a struggle, and this is like a primary question that sometimes we don't even have all the answers to, is who is using our data? Like, you know, we have this available, and we know some of our stakeholders, but do we know about every single one of them? So, you know, you can't really nail down an ROI unless you can, you know, trace that back to, you know, everybody who's using your data for what purposes and what areas they were contributing to. Like our team, you know, we're more of like a middleman or, well, a middle person rather for, you know, data within the company, in that, you know, we provide this for other teams and then they're using it for a variety of analytics related use cases. But, you know, we don't necessarily see to it too much beyond that. So we can't really get a, you know, reasonable calculation on what, you know, what type of value and ROI our data provides without seeing more details along that. You know, obviously there's a lot that comes out of it, but we kind of really need to draw that all together through proper lineage and kind of just like proper ownership to really figure out like what our value is overall to the company.
Yeah, My feeling is that in many cases, or at least in, well, many is maybe too much, but in some cases in software, that's easier, right? It's like you're a company, you have a prospect you want to sell your software to, and then there's, okay, like, here's like three features that are missing to unlock this much revenue, right? And then it becomes very clear of, hey, okay, like, do we deploy the engineering resources to be able to then win that deal in the end? For data, which is mostly about improving decisions, right? Like, this lineage aspect just becomes so much harder because a lot of the decisions in the company that in the end you're powering, like, you can't directly trace it back to, oh, this person like looked at that dashboard during that day and then made a like decision which saved the company, I don't know, like $10 million or whatever.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Like, of course, if you're working at like your typical SaaS company where you're shipping something to, you know, clients, then of course, you know, you can really trace that pretty easily. But when you're working within a bigger organization and you serve like, you know, different teams from your data, from the data standpoint, it's a little harder to put all those details together. So that's why you really need to have that type of collaboration in place with stakeholders, which we've certainly done a much better job of over the last few years, I feel. But yeah, there still needs to be some work to really get to, you know, a proper number of, you know, what is the ROI of our data? Because I'd be curious to know that ourselves. I couldn't give you that answer if you asked me.
We talked a lot about kind of tools now, right? Testing, data quality, kind of ROI on data, data cost, all of those things. What do you feel is something that's missing in the ecosystem, right? Kind of if you started a company today to work on some tool to make your life as a data engineer easier, do you feel like there's something where there's a lot of opportunity or kind of not a very mature tool yet?
I feel like we've made a lot of great progress in this space within the last few years. You know, one area that I would think of that first came to mind, and then my questions were kind of answered there, is the area of cost, actually. So, you know, if you're a data engineer, of course, you can always think of, you know, the days when you would have to, you know, debug some, you know, slowly performing pipeline, where, you know, you'd have to look into like the Spark plan, you know, look at all the details. Is there any data skew or spill? You know, ask yourself all those questions. And then you would have to put together some approach and then just kind of like see what the overall improvement of that is. And then when it comes to costs, you know, you kind of have to do that debugging as well and see if you can optimize your pipelines in any way. And this was kind of something that caught me by surprise at the beginning of, I think 2022 was when I first heard about it. But there's this company by the name of Sync Computing. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them before or not, but one thing that they do.
What was the first word? Like sync. What computing?
Sync,
like data sync.
Yeah. Okay. Well, not like you know, sync kitchen appliance, but like sync, the, you know, the syncing process.
Yes. Data sync, like the data. Yeah.
So, you know, I first heard about this tool, I think actually through Reddit, because I use Reddit mainly for work purposes at this point. I'm a loser like that. So, you know, I saw about this tool, but essentially, you know, they could actually, you know, look at the logs, you know, for your like EMR application or your Databricks job, and they could, you know, automatically, you know, recommend an optimized configuration for it. You know, that didn't really exist before. You know, this was a lot of fine tuning you would have to do. And then of course you might see some costs that, you know, made sense and you would just leave it be. But of course, you know, perhaps it could even be better. So to have something like that that can actually apply, you know, like, you know, that proper modeling and artificial intelligence that didn't really exist in that area to kind of tell you, you know, how you could be doing things better, I think that's a great use case for data engineers because that was one of the ones that, you know, we had kind of struggled on in the past. Yes, data quality and a lot of those other aspects, you can have tools already existed to answer those questions, or it wasn't as difficult to put those tools together. But especially with cost becoming such a big concern for companies in the last few years, it's great to see that there's some, you know, emergence in this space of those sorts of tools. So I guess to kind of answer your question, I'm not sure. I mean, yes, of course, if you really think about it, I'm sure there's a lot of unanswered questions in the data world. But, you know, it just feels like whenever you have an unanswered question, you just wait a few weeks and then you find out, oh, this thing is out there or it's coming out. Like that's how fast this space evolves. So I think you just kind of like take it week by week and, you know, evolve with the times. You know, what you're thinking of, what you think are big things at the beginning of the year are going to be completely different at the end of the year. Like I think going into 2023, for example, you know, did we really know what to expect with, like, you know, chat GPT, you know, generative AI, LLMs? Like, I hadn't heard of any of those terms before. And now they're everywhere. And, you know, all the companies are going to probably emerge into that space this year if they haven't already. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, really exciting. And that's why I said, you know, being a part of the data world is so, you know, interesting right now. So I guess we'll see what's in store.
Yeah, definitely. I think you mentioning these like cost optimization tools, that's super interesting. Sync, which you mentioned, seems to be mainly focused on Databricks. I know that there's also Kibo on Snowflake, for example, who offer these types of things as well.
Yes. And I think it's great to have all those aspects covered, of course, because, you know, there are companies who go with Databricks, there's companies who go with Snowflake, there's companies who even use both, you know, just depending on, you know, what works best in various use cases. So having those tools in place to kind of figure out how you can be doing things smarter is great, because Databricks and Snowflake are great tools. But if you don't know how to use them properly, you're going to get hit with a very big bill. They're very good about that, just as any, you know, cloud application would be, because that's how it's designed. So got to make sure you're doing it the right way.
Cool, Matt. So all of this was awesome. Hey, I learned a lot about how you think about data engineering. I think all of the things you mentioned around data quality, cost are like on everyone's mind at the moment, right? Like everyone is struggling with these things, working towards solutions, kind of trying to implement things in their own organization there. So hearing your thoughts and how you think about that was super interesting. Any closing words from your end and things you wanted to mention or bring up?
No, I mean, thank you. Once again, thank you for having me. One thing that hopefully everybody who, you know, listens to this program knows, that the data community on LinkedIn and kind of just like that whole social media form is very, very strong. So there's a lot of good thought leaders in the space who put out some thoughts. You know, we've touched on some names there and some companies. But, you know, if anybody has any suggestion or any names, you know, or any, you know, would like to know about any of those names, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be happy to connect you to the right people, because I've definitely spent a good portion of like the last 2 years really trying to expand my network. And that's how I end up, you know, here and in various, you know, venues like this. So we're all a very tight-knit community, and it's great to see, you know, the evolution that this space has had during that time. But yeah, thank you, Ben, for having me. Thank you to the Data Engineering Show. It was great to be on this program today.
The Data Engineering Show is brought to you by Firebolt, the cloud data warehouse for low latency analytics. Get $200 credits and start your free trial at firebolt.io.